You know that feeling when you finally hit a major savings goal? Like you have been really disciplined, you cut back on the takeout, and you finally have that emergency fund fully built up.
Right. It is a great feeling at first.
Yeah, it really is. Maybe you are sitting on a pile of cash for a down payment on a house you want to buy sometime next year. You log into your banking app, you look at that balance, and for about 5 minutes, you just feel incredibly responsible.
Just 5 minutes, though.
Exactly, because then a few weeks go by. You log in again, and the money is just sitting there. I mean, doing absolutely nothing.
Yeah, well, it is a very specific, modern kind of financial anxiety. You have done the heavy lifting by actually accumulating the capital, but now you have this creeping, uncomfortable suspicion that your cash is just getting lazy
Oh, totally lazy.
because you are constantly reading headlines about markets moving, and you feel like you're actively missing out on potential growth just by leaving it untouched.
That is exactly it. It is this nagging voice saying, shouldn't this money be out there working a 9-to-5? But at the same time, you know you cannot just throw your emergency fund into a volatile stock market.
No, definitely not.
Because you might need that cash to fix a blown transmission next month, or you might actually find that perfect house. So that tension between wanting growth and needing absolute safety is exactly what we're looking at
It
today.
is a delicate balance to strike.
It really is. So welcome to this deep dive. Today, we have got an incredibly insightful stack of research focused on short-term investing and liquidity management. We are specifically zeroing in on the landscape in Saudi Arabia and the broader GCC.
Which is a fascinating market right now.
Oh, absolutely. And our mission today is to figure out how to make your extra cash work for you without locking it away behind unbreakable glass.
And we need to approach this analytically. We aren't going to just rattle off a basic vocabulary list of financial products. We want to actually tear apart the mechanics underneath them.
Right, look under the hood.
Exactly. Because if you are managing wealth at this level, the real secret isn't mindlessly chasing the absolute highest percentage yield. It is about understanding the underlying machinery of these assets and why matching your specific real-world timeline to the precise asset class is really the only way to fundamentally mitigate risk.
So what does this all mean? Let us start by defining the actual rules of the game we are playing here. Because before we can even think about picking an investment, we have to know what the financial world actually considers short term.
Yeah, that is a good starting point.
I feel like that definition changes depending on who you ask, you know?
Well, it can, but in the context of institutional wealth management and the specific parameters we are looking at today, the definition is actually quite strict. A short-term investment is basically a financial instrument or asset that you intend to hold for under 3 years, period.
Wait, under 3 years. So this is a very specific window.
Exactly. And understanding the psychology of this window is crucial. This is really the strategic middle ground of finance.
Okay, how so?
Well, on one extreme end of the spectrum, you have your standard checking account. The money is instantly available. I mean, you can swipe a debit card at 2 in the morning, but it earns absolutely zero return.
Right, it is just digital cash.
Yes. Then on the opposite extreme, you have a 5-year bond or a long-term equity portfolio or even real estate. Your money is completely tied up and it is exposed to significant market volatility.
But with a much bigger upside.
Exactly. It is positioned for serious compounded growth over a decade.
Okay, so this middle ground, it is clearly not about getting rich quick. It sounds like the primary goal here is capital preservation.
That is the core objective, yes.
Like you want the exact amount of money you put in to still be there when you need it, but you want it to generate, well, a little bit of momentum. I always think about idle cash like a car sitting in your driveway with the engine running.
That is a great way to visualize it.
Right. It is burning gas, which in the financial sense is the value of your money eroding, but the car is going absolutely nowhere. A short-term investment needs to be like finding a parking lot that actually pays you a fee just to park there.
That is a highly accurate visualization. And what's fascinating here is the fundamental trade-off you are making when you park in that lot.
What kind of trade-off?
Well, when you engage in short-term investing, you have to accept that the main commodity you are buying with these lower returns is not portfolio growth. What you are actively purchasing is liquidity.
Meaning the ability to just grab my cash and run the second I need it.
Precisely. It is the ability to access your funds rapidly without taking a financial penalty when real life inevitably happens.
Yeah, like the blown transmission we talked about.
Right. You are willingly accepting a 4% return instead of aiming for a 10% stock market gain, because that 6% difference is basically the premium you pay for the privilege of the exit door. You are paying for the right to move your money without friction.
All right, so if we are trying to buy liquidity and protect our capital, where do we actually park this car? What does the specific menu look like, especially in the Saudi market?
There are a few distinct tiers to consider.
Let us walk through the mechanics then, starting from the absolute most basic level.
Sure. The foundational level is just the classic savings account. This is where most people start, and unfortunately, it is where a lot of people stop. Right now, you are looking at returns of roughly 1% annually for standard accounts.
Which is practically nothing. I mean, why would anyone bother moving money from a checking account to a savings account for 1%? It barely covers a single cup of coffee over a whole year.
You bother, because the risk is virtually non-existent. The funds are usually government insured up to a certain amount, and the liquidity is absolute.
But why is the return so aggressively low?
You have to look at it from the bank's perspective. The bank is only willing to pay you 1% because you retain the power to withdraw every single rial or dollar tomorrow morning.
Oh, I see. The bank wants to take my deposits and lend them out for a 30-year mortgage, right? Or a massive corporate loan where they can charge 7 or 8%.
Exactly.
But they cannot safely do that if I might just demand my money back on a random Tuesday. My liquidity is a literal liability for them.
You hit the nail on the head. Your absolute freedom restricts their ability to generate high profits.
Yeah.
So if you want them to pay you more than 1%, you have to solve their problem.
By giving up some of that immediate access.
Exactly. Which brings us to the next tier, time deposits, also known as fixed term savings.
All right. So this is where I say to the bank, hey, I promise I will not touch this money for 6 months.
Correct. You give the bank the gift of certainty.
Yep.
You lock the money away for a predefined window, typically 3, 6, or 12 months.
And I get a better rate for that.
Yes, because they now know exactly how long they have to safely deploy your capital elsewhere. They compensate you with a higher rate. In the current Saudi context, these are generally sitting around 3 to 4%.
Okay, but what if I break that promise? Like, what if I lock it up for 12 months, but at month 4, my roof caves in and I just really need the cash?
Then you pay a penalty. Usually, you forfeit a significant portion, or maybe even all of the accrued profit. Your principal, the initial money you put in, is safe, but you lose the reward because you broke the agreement.
That makes total sense. It is a contract. But what if I do not want to be locked into a single commercial bank's proprietary product? What if I want something with a bit more structural security?
Like something government-backed.
Yeah, exactly.
Then you step into the sovereign debt market and look at treasury bills, or T-bills. These are currently yielding around 3.5% to 4%, with maturities strictly under a year.
Okay, so similar rates.
Yes, but the actual mechanism of how a T-bill works is quite different from a bank deposit. You do not actually earn interest in the traditional compounding sense.
Wait, hang on. If I am not earning interest, how am I making a 4% return?
Because T-bills are sold at a discount to their face value. Let us say you want to buy a T-bill that will be worth exactly $1,000 when it matures in 6 months.
Okay, I am with you.
The government does not sell it to you for $1,000 and then mail you interest checks. Instead, they sell you that $1,000 T-bill today for, say, $960.
I get it. So I pay $960 now, and in 6 months, the government hands me $1,000.
Exactly. The $40 profit is just baked into the fact that you bought it on sale. It is what we call a zero coupon instrument.
That is super interesting.
It is incredibly clean from an accounting perspective. And because it is backed by the sovereign government, the default risk is generally considered to be the absolute lowest in the entire market.
Okay, so we have gone from 1% to maybe 4%. But if I am looking at my idle cash and I want to push that yield even higher, say, into the 5 or 6% range without locking it up for 3 years, where do I go?
To hit those numbers, you have to introduce professional management. And critically, you have to accept a slight degree of market risk.
Market risk, okay.
This is where money market funds and short-term ETFs, exchange-traded funds, come into play. A money market fund basically pools your cash with thousands of other investors.
Like a giant pot of money.
Right. The fund managers then take that massive pool of capital and buy a highly diversified portfolio of short-term, low-risk securities. Think T-bills, corporate commercial paper, and short-term bank debt.
And I'm guessing because they are buying at an institutional scale, they can negotiate way better yields than I ever could as an individual.
Correct. The pooling creates massive efficiency. Money market funds are typically yielding between 4 and 5.5% right now.
That is a nice bump.
It is. Now, if you want to push even further, short-term ETFs that focus on short-duration corporate and government bonds can actually reach yields of 5 to 6.5%. And the liquidity is fantastic because you can buy and sell ETF shares on the open stock market almost instantly during regular trading hours.
Wait. Let me stop you there. If an ETF is giving me 6.5% and I can sell it instantly on an app just like a stock, that sounds way too good to be true.
It does sound great, yes.
Why would not everyone just put their savings account money in a bond ETF then? There has to be a trap door here.
The trap door is market fluctuation.
Okay, explain that.
Unlike a time deposit or a T-bill that you hold to maturity, where your principal amount is mathematically guaranteed, an ETF's price moves up and down every single day based on the broader market.
Ah, so the value isn't locked.
Right. You have high liquidity, meaning you can sell whenever you want, but you're not guaranteed to get back exactly what you put in if you're forced to sell on the wrong day.
Okay, let us unpack this because we have been talking about standard conventional finance so far. But what about the listener who specifically needs ethical or Sharia compliant options?
That is a very important consideration.
Yeah, it is a massive non-negotiable factor for millions of investors in Saudi Arabia and the GCC. Are they just forced to sacrifice these 5 or 6% returns for their ethics? I mean, how can a financial product compete with conventional interest rates if Islamic law strictly prohibits the charging or paying of interest?
That is a structural challenge that Islamic finance has actually solved brilliantly. Investors absolutely do not have to sacrifice returns. The primary instrument here is called the sukuk.
The sukuk, okay.
Yes, which is often roughly translated as an Islamic bond, though the actual mechanics are fundamentally different.
How so? If it is not a bond paying interest, what exactly is it?
Well, a conventional bond is just a debt instrument. You lend money to a corporation, they owe you a debt, and they pay you a percentage of that debt as interest. A sukuk, however, is an asset-backed ownership instrument.
Ownership.
Exactly.
Yeah.
When you purchase a sukuk, you are not lending money. You're actually buying a certificate that represents a fractional, undivided ownership interest in a tangible, underlying asset or a specific commercial project.
So instead of earning interest on a loan, I am earning a share of the actual physical profit generated by that specific asset, like, say, the rental income from a hospital or the toll revenue from a highway.
Exactly right. The returns are completely tied to the performance and the cash flow of a real-world asset. So you receive fixed periodic profit distributions, not interest payments.
That is brilliant.
It is. And in the current market, short-duration sukuk, meaning those maturing in 6 to 24 months, are highly competitive. They are yielding anywhere from 4 to 5%.
And are these difficult to find? Is this some kind of niche boutique product that I have to hunt down?
Not at all. In the GCC, sukuk are a colossal, deeply integrated pillar of the mainstream financial ecosystem. Governments issue them constantly to fund infrastructure, and major corporations use them for capital all the time.
So they are everywhere.
Yes, there are dozens of highly liquid, Sharia-compliant money market funds built entirely around these instruments. They're easily accessible to the everyday investor.
Okay, so we have this incredibly diverse menu. We have got T-bills, ETFs, sukuk, all offering pretty decent returns with relatively short horizons.
A lot of options.
But this brings us to a really crucial crossroads. Because if I can get 5% on a highly liquid ETF or a sukuk fund, why would I not just dump absolutely every spare dollar I have into these? We mentioned the trapdoor of market fluctuation earlier, but what are the other hidden risks of playing it safe in the short term?
The most immediate risk is simply the opportunity cost, lower overall returns.
Like missing out on the big game.
Exactly. When you relentlessly prioritize safety and liquidity, you fundamentally forfeit the chance at massive compounding portfolio growth. You are not going to see the 20 or 30% annual spikes you might get from holding a successful tech stock for 5 years.
Sure, I get that. But honestly, I am trading the chance of making a fortune for the mathematical guarantee of not losing one. I feel like I can live with that trade-off for my emergency fund.
You can, but you also have to live with the silent thief in the room, which is inflation.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because people look at their bank statements and think, okay, I put in $10,000, and a year later, I still have $10,000 plus a little extra.
Right. They see the number go up.
Yeah. They think, well, I didn't lose any money. I'm totally safe. But they are completely ignoring the context of the real world outside the bank.
Precisely. Let us look at the mechanics of purchasing power. Imagine inflation is running at 5%. That means the basic cost of existing, like your rent, groceries, healthcare, transportation, it all costs 5% more this year than it did last year.
So everything is more expensive.
Right. And if your ultra-safe time deposit is only yielding a 3% return, you're actually losing wealth.
Because the math does not add up. You aren't growing your money at all. You are just sinking slightly slower in the economic quicksand.
Sinking slower, exactly.
The nominal number on your screen went up, sure. But what that number can actually buy in a grocery store went down?
It is a guaranteed loss of purchasing power, masked by a rising account balance. And beyond inflation, we have to circle back to that market sensitivity you questioned earlier.
The ETF fluctuation.
Yes, specifically regarding bond ETFs.
Right. You said the price fluctuates. But why? If a bond pays a guaranteed 4%, why would the value of the ETF holding it suddenly drop?
Because it is an inverse relationship based on broader interest rates. Let us say your ETF holds thousands of bonds paying 4%. Suddenly, the central bank raises interest rates to fight inflation, and brand new bonds hitting the market today start paying 6%.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Right. Suddenly, no one wants to buy your old 4% bonds when they can easily buy new 6% bonds.
That makes sense. Who would want the lower rate?
Exactly. So the mathematical value of your 4% bonds, and therefore the price of your ETF, has to drop to make them attractive to buyers. The yield goes up, but the underlying principal value takes a hit. And if your transmission blows on that exact day and you have to sell your ETF shares to pay the mechanic, you might end up selling at a loss.
That seesaw effect is brutal if your timing is just unlucky. But you know, there is another risk in the research that I had honestly never considered before, and I think it is a massive blind spot for most people.
Which one?
Reinvestment risk.
Ah, yes.
Yes.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, reinvestment risk is perhaps the most dangerous trap for conservative short-term investors.
How does that actually work?
Let me paint a scenario. You find a fantastic 12-month time deposit, or a Sukuk, paying a really impressive 5.5%. You lock your money in, and you feel incredibly smart.
I would feel pretty good about that.
But over those next 12 months, the global economy slows down. Central banks panic and start aggressively slashing interest rates to stimulate borrowing.
Okay, so the macroeconomic weather completely changes while I am just locked safely in my house.
Exactly. So month 12 finally rolls around. Your investment matures perfectly. The bank hands you back your principal, plus your guaranteed 5.5% profit. You are thrilled.
Awesome. So I go to put it back in, right?
You turn around to reinvest that bigger pile of cash. But because central banks slashed rates, the absolute best short-term rate available on the market today is a dismal 2%.
Wow. So I have successfully protected my capital, but my income stream just got obliterated.
Obliterated, exactly.
I have a bunch of cash in hand, but absolutely nowhere profitable to put it. I lost my great setup purely because the clock ran out.
That is reinvestment risk. Because you insisted on keeping your time horizon strictly short-term, you force yourself to constantly re-enter the market.
And hope the weather is good.
Right. Every time you re-enter, you are at the total mercy of whatever the current prevailing rate happens to be.
All right. This is getting a little stressful. Margins are tight. Inflation is eroding my purchasing power. Bond ETF prices are seesawing all over the place. And if I do manage to lock in a good rate, I might get burned by reinvestment risk a year later.
It is a lot to navigate.
How do I actually manage this? I mean, how can a listener strategically squeeze the most value out of these tools without turning this into a highly stressful full-time job?
The research outlines several highly pragmatic strategies. The first is almost deceptively simple. You must actively shop around, and you must discard banking loyalty.
Discard loyalty?
Yes. Do not just blindly accept whatever rate your primary day-to-day checking account bank offers you out of convenience.
Because they're probably lowballing you.
Often, yes.
Yeah.
The data shows that in the Saudi market specifically, investors frequently find scenarios where Islamic banks or specialized digital platforms are offering significantly better returns on short-term Sukuk products than massive conventional banks are offering on standard time deposits.
So being lazy is literally costing you percentage points.
Exactly. But even if you find a great rate, you have to watch out for the friction costs.
Right, the fees.
You must be vigilant about hidden fees, particularly when you move into professionally managed products like money market funds or ETFs. Professional management isn't free.
There's always a catch.
There is always an expense ratio or a management fee. If a fund is advertising a gross yield of 5%, but they charge a 1% annual management fee, your actual realized return is only 4%.
That is a huge chunk.
It is. That single, seemingly small fee can completely erase the entire mathematical advantage you thought you were gaining over a basic fee-free time deposit.
So always read the fine print. But what about that reinvestment risk? How do we fight the fact that the clock is always running out?
That is the trickier part.
Yeah, if I do not know what central bank interest rates are going to be in 12 months, how do I actually protect my income stream?
You utilize a mechanical approach called a ladder strategy.
A ladder strategy, yes.
It is designed specifically to neutralize reinvestment risk and maintain rolling liquidity.
How does it work?
Let us say you have $12,000 of idle cash. Instead of taking that entire lump sum and locking it into one single 12-month instrument, you deliberately fracture it. You build rungs on a ladder.
Okay, walk me through the actual math of that. I am a visual learner.
Sure. You take $3,000 and put it in a 3-month T-bill.
Got it.
You put the next $3,000 in a 6-month deposit, the next $3,000 in a 9-month instrument, and the final $3,000 in a 12-month sukuk.
I see. So I am deliberately staggering the maturity dates.
Precisely. Because of this structure, every 90 days, without fail, a chunk of your money naturally matures and returns to you with profit.
That is pretty smart.
It is. If you have an emergency, you are never more than a few weeks away from fresh, penalty-free cash.
Which solves the liquidity problem.
Yes. But more importantly, if broader interest rates go up, you now have a constant stream of cash freeing up that you can immediately reinvest at those new higher rates, rather than having all $12,000 stubbornly locked in at last year's lower rate.
That is incredibly elegant. It just smooths out the entire ride. Hmm. You aren't really trying to guess where the market is going. You are just building a machine that constantly adapts to it.
That is the exact goal.
Now, we've talked extensively about traditional banks, government debt, and stock market funds. But the research also dives into modern fintech solutions, explicitly mentioning platforms like Osul Gamma.
Yes. The fintech space is changing things rapidly.
How does a platform structure actually change the day-to-day dynamic for the everyday Saudi investor?
Well, it represents a massive democratization of access. Historically, if you wanted to participate in robust, tangible, asset-backed investments, say like a commercial real estate plaza generating heavy rental income.
Right, the big stuff.
You faced two massive barriers. First, it required immense capital. I mean, you needed millions to buy the building.
And I do not have millions lying around.
Most people don't. And second, your money was highly illiquid. You were locked into that concrete for 5 to 10 years.
Which completely violates our rule of short-term under 3 years investing.
Exactly. So what platforms like Osul Gamma do is utilize technology to fractionalize those massive assets.
Break them up.
Yes. They take a large cash-generating project and break the ownership down into tiny proportionate slices. This allows the everyday investor to participate with a few thousand rials instead of millions.
That is huge.
But the true innovation for our specific topic today is that these platforms are increasingly designing these fractional investments with short, predefined holding periods.
Oh, wow. So I get the stability of owning a tangible physical asset, like a brick in a hospital or a commercial plaza, but I am not trapped in a 10-year mortgage.
Correct.
I can exit in a year or two.
Right. It provides a regulated, highly transparent, and Sharia-compliant way to build income over shorter time frames.
That transparency is key.
Crucially, it allows you to bypass the opaque complexity of deep financial markets. Because when you put money in a giant bank, you have no real idea who they are lending it to.
You really don't.
But a platform like Gamma gives you direct visibility. You know exactly which physical asset is generating your specific return.
It really all comes back to control, doesn't it? Looking at everything we have unpacked today, short-term investing isn't really about getting wealthy.
No, it is not.
It is about control, it is about peace of mind, and it is about stopping the financial bleeding of idle cash. You just have to be brutally honest about your own goals.
Honesty with yourself is the first step.
Because if you know you absolutely need cash in exactly 90 days for a tuition payment, you cannot take risks. You look at a T-bill or a savings account.
Exactly.
But if you have a looser timeline and can comfortably wait 12 to 24 months, you start building that ladder strategy with Sukuk or fractional asset-backed platforms. You identify the timeline, and then you just match it to the tool.
This raises an important question, one that fundamentally challenges how we are traditionally taught to view financial security.
What is that?
We spend so much of our lives agonizing over the risk of investing, right? We are terrified of the stock market crashing, or a company going bankrupt, or a bond defaulting.
Sure, it is scary stuff.
But consider this. What if the true ultimate cost of playing it safe with massive piles of idle cash isn't just about the disappointment of missed wealth?
What else is it?
What if the real danger is fundamentally misunderstanding how the actual physical purchasing power of your money quietly mutates and degrades over a 3-year period while you simply aren't looking?
Wow, that completely flips the perspective. We think doing nothing is the safe choice, but doing nothing is actually making a very specific, risk-heavy decision.
It is a choice with real consequences.
Is deciding to let inflation slowly rust out the engine while the car just sits in the driveway burning gas.
Well, it has been absolutely fascinating tearing down these mechanics with you today.
I really enjoyed it.
To everyone listening, thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Take a hard look at your own financial driveways today. See if your cash is just sitting there idling. And as always, keep questioning, keep learning, and stay curious.